Melbourne AA Steps Weekend 2008. This is Sam talking about Step 7.
My name's Sam, I'm an alcoholic. Yeah, and it's a bit nerve-wracking being up here, anyway. Step 7, when I got asked to share at this meeting, I sort of said yes, and then I didn't think, because they asked me about sort of 6 weeks or, I don't know, maybe even 2 months ago now, and I didn't really think about it until about 3 days ago or so, and I pulled out the letter, you know, that they'd sent me and so on, and then I saw there was, like, you know, however many speakers over the weekend, and I suddenly realised it was probably quite a big deal, and at which point I started to get nervous. And thought that you might actually want to hear me say something which was, I don't know, made sense or, you know. And it's funny because then I paused and I thought, really, that's just my ego wanting me to sort of look good in front of you all. And I've known, as I know myself, I guess now, you know, I am just me, so I'll try and be just me, because that's all I can be, anyway. When I first did this step, I've been sober now for 18 years, and when I first did this step, I just didn't get it. I thought it was the most bizarre thing, because people said to me, you do this step, but don't expect anything to happen straight away, and I just thought, like, why would you bother to do it if you weren't going to get anything out of it? And I had different people would tell me things that there was differences between defects of character and, you know, what our shortcomings are, and I got very, very confused about all of that. And anyway, in the 3 days just before I paused and decided to be just me, I actually did look some stuff up on the internet, and there was a lovely little thing in there. Somebody was talking about step 7, and they said the reason that Bill Wilson used three different ways, you know, through step 5, 6, and 7, it's three different descriptions of things, was basically to avoid repetition. And I thought, oh, so basically it all means the same thing. And for years I kind of pondered that and had all these different people would tell me these different explanations of what was the difference between a shortcoming and a character defect, and it was all rubbish, really. It was all the same. So anyway, that was a lot of wasted time. So to avoid all of that for you, all that wasted time, apparently that's the go. When I think now, in hindsight, you know, when I think about what this step means to me, it's been an unfolding, and I would say now I never understood the significance of this step when I first sort of started taking it, and now I would say that it's a step that really allows me to feel so much more comfortable within my own skin, because I only have to be me, you know. And I never understood why it was that when I did this step, things didn't just instantly get taken away. You know, that here I am, and I've gone through and I've listed all the defects in the car, and I've, you know, and the motor's not running and all the rest of it properly, and I've, you know, I've put God knows what in wherever and done whatever. And so now I've taken it to the mechanic, and I guess this step is saying to somebody else, you know, can you help me? Can you help me fix this car? What I didn't understand was why it was that when I did that, all of a sudden I didn't get this brand new spanking car, you know, that I've gone from having the beaten up Mitsubishi Magna. How come I didn't then get given back a Porsche, you know? Why didn't it work that way? And I guess for me, some of it was, I don't think it's God's intention just to kind of clean the slate, make me absolutely perfect, because in one hit, because then I wouldn't get to know who I was. And also, as crazy as this sounds, occasionally my character defects may actually be of use to somebody else. And so there may be circumstances where God sees fit for me to completely act out in an inappropriate way, and for, because there's another motive which is completely separate from me. So that happens, I guess, from time to time. Having said that, I shouldn't use that as a self-justification for... for which actually self... I'd have to say self-righteous anger would be... When I think about, you know, in terms of character defects and so on, I'll come back to it, but I reckon justified anger has probably been one of the hardest that I've had to deal with, you know. Maybe I'll talk about it now. While I think about it. In a previous life, I worked for a while sort of as a union rep, and so part of that was that, you know, I would have to take on other people's battles and so on. And I think that's probably always been in my nature. It certainly has to been to sort of look after other people and so on. And don't get me wrong, I think now when I look at that, obviously I get something out of it. I don't do it because I'm some kind of saint. I actually get reward out of, you know, helping other people. It makes me feel good. You know, it's not altruistic by any sort of sense of the imagination. It's, you know, I get a good sense of feeling out of having done that. And sometimes in the midst of doing that, whether I'm doing it for others or, you know, if I'm fighting a battle, even if it be for myself, and it could be about anything, it could be about the environment, it could be about whatever it is, I can really get self-righteous, really. And what I had to learn was that there's a difference between, I guess, standing up for yourself or standing up for a principle or something, and there's a difference between carrying somebody because they've got so far up their nose, their feet are resting on your chin. Do you know what I mean? Like, if I'm carrying that around, if I'm carrying somebody around and I've got that, and it's then bordering into resentment and so on, then that's not doing me any favours. And if I'm so self-righteous and I'm so angry that I'm just kind of beating the drum and I don't listen to somebody else's opinion or I don't, then that kind of defeats the purpose as well, because guaranteed they'll tune off. They don't, you know, and I'm not going to get anywhere. And so dealing with that kind of stuff, it's been tricky. And some of that has been to learn how to pause, and, you know, and some of it has been to learn to try and offer up and think, well, what is God's will in this situation, not just what is my own will and so on. So having said that, I guess, you know, in this, sometimes when I'm trying to work some of this stuff out, it's kind of like trying to have a compass to know which direction it is I should be heading in. And, you know, if I'm setting off for a destination, it makes much more... I used to kind of do the... I'm actually geographically impaired, and I used to kind of do the thing. I remember being in Sydney and trying to get from, you know, Northern Shore down across over to Bondi, you know, and having been there maybe half a dozen times and thinking I'd rely on my memory. And the last resort ever was to pull out the map and have a look. And I can tell you, you know, it was this really convoluted path. It was kind of interesting. You know, you got to see a bit of extra scenery and so on along the way, but it took a hell of a lot longer. And it would have just made sense if I'd sort of had a look at where was I trying to get to, you know, as my destination, I guess. Now, in step seven, there's a step seven prayer, which I guess is almost like that gives you the direction of north, if that makes sense. And I'll just read it out now. So it is, "My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen." And that's a nice one. And what it does is it, I guess for me, is it takes me a little bit out of the picture, and it starts to give me a bit more humility about where it is I'm trying to head. There's humility, I guess, in the asking for help, and there's also a balancing out that it reminds me, because, you know, as an alcoholic, I can be extremely self-centered, and I guess, you know, all of a sudden then it starts me thinking less of myself and more of others. And there was a nice one on the internet the other day I read, which is, humility is not thinking less of yourself, it is thinking of yourself less. And I thought that was nice. It was kind of summed it up. And as a true alcoholic, I always want to know, what am I going to get out of this? What's it going to mean to me? You know, there's got to be, you know, because I am self-centered, I want to think, what is there going to be some benefit for me, you know? And Mother Teresa talked about it, and she said, if you are humble, nothing can touch you, neither praise nor disgrace, because you know who you are. And I'd have to say that's probably been one of the most beautiful gifts that I've been given. In this fellowship, is that, you know, there's no way known I would go back to being 10 years younger. You know, my head was just still messy. I really cared, you know, about what you would think of me. I mean, I still care, but not to the same extent, not so that it cripples me, you know. I really didn't have a sense of who I was or where I was going or what my limitations were, or what my abilities were. I had so many fears of, you know, being dogged by, you know, fear of success. I also had fear of failure, you know, this kind of just craziness. And it's just been by chipping away. And part of me, I sort of wondered why doesn't some of this stuff just get removed? And some of it is a learning experience. In step six, in a 12 and 12, it says, so if I go back, sometimes when I ask these questions, if I go back and I look at the previous step, it gives me a bit more of an answer. And it says, if we ask God will certainly forgive our derelictions, but in no case does he render us white as snow and keep us that way without our cooperation. That is something we are supposed to be willing to work toward ourselves. He asks only that we try as best we know how to make progress in the building of character. So, and I guess it's written there. So, and that's it. So, I guess, and to me, in step six, it was kind of, you know, I start looking at that stuff and I kind of start working some of it out. And in step seven, I kind of get the humility of asking for help, and being able to think less of myself and more of others. It's a nice little starting point. And who wouldn't want to, you know, I much prefer a life where I get to act kindly and think of love and show tolerance. And it's, to be honest, it's just so much less exhausting than the other way, you know. And there's lots of defects. I've got sort of a bit under 5 minutes left. There's lots of defects, there's, you know, that I've had to deal with. And in the big book, you know, like sloth this morning. I really could have got into sloth this morning. You know, I was under a nice warm doona, and it was Sunday morning, and it all could have been justified, and I easily could have, you know, kind of lain there for a little while longer. And it's funny, one of the things is, I guess when I first did my step five, leading up to this stuff, it was all the big stuff, you know. It was kind of when I first did a step five, the character defects and stuff were glaringly obvious. It was the stuff that was really, and then as I kind of go on in through the years, it's not, it's much more subtle, you know. I know when not to say something really inappropriate, telling somebody to stuff off, or, you know, in that kind of, you know, indignation and self-righteous anger. I know that's inappropriate. It's the smallest kind of seething, kind of just, you know, infiltrating stuff, you know, the lying there on a Sunday morning thinking, I'll just press snooze one more time, you know, that's the, when I know that I should be getting up, that's the, you know, that's kind of the sort of, I guess, where I am now in terms of working this stuff. When I went through uni, I learned so much about procrastination. If you want to know about procrastination, truly an expert. You know, when I've got to study for a head and neck exam, and, you know, and I'm meant to be doing, you know, the pathways of bloody cranial nerves and God knows what, I can go and clean my car, which I haven't done for 5 years. You know, I can. And I became an expert at washing up as opposed to studying. There's countless lists of things. And it sounds funny, but when it came to procrastination, one of the things I had to learn to do was actually to slow down and to pause and write little lists out. And it's funny that even if I started with the smallest thing on that list, how quickly things started ticking off, you know. So when I was studying, even if I just thought, I'm just going to learn this, you know, particular one thing, then the next thing I'd know is I'd been sitting studying for 5 hours, and I could have procrastinated for 2 to get there, you know. Fear always infiltrated my life and still does from time to time, but nowhere near the crippling fear that I had when I first came in here. I would shy away from leaves on trees. I mean, just ridiculous stuff. And it's been funny that my fears have changed over time as I've had new experiences and so on. Like, literally, when I first came in, I think I only ever was really fearful of failure. And as I've become successful, I've had fear of success. You know, it's funny, I never worried about losing anything when I didn't have anything to lose. And this fellowship has given me more than I ever dreamed of, and more than I ever would have asked for. I came here to get sober, and I've been given, you know, I've been given a life, really. I know now what it is, what unconditional love is. I know what it is to feel secure. I know what serenity is. You know, this is one of those steps that really, I guess, started to give me serenity. You know. And yet insidiously fear of success crept in as I started worrying about what I would lose or what would happen if I didn't reach my full potential. It's funny, isn't it? You can get these new things. And as my life has gone on, I've had lots of different, you know, over 18 years it's changed. You know, I've been through sort of initial recovery, I've been through studying, I've been through, you know, working for people, I've been through owning my own business, I've just gone back now and I'm doing some teaching, you know, it's changed. And every time there's change, you know, I have new things that come up and I get to go and I get to redo this stuff and try and work out what it is and why I'm feeling uncomfortable and, you know, and that kind of stuff. And try and work out a little bit about what God's will for me is. And I know today that it isn't driving a car, you know, a million miles an hour sort of randomly through the streets of Sydney. to follow on from Paul's. I know now that there is kind of a direction. And for that I'm very, very grateful. Thank you.
Information about the annual Melbourne AA Steps Weekend is available from www.stepsweekend.aagroup.org.au. Thanks for letting us share.